Hi, today is October 29th, 2017. This is Movies Podcast number 228. Todd Agassi Ward, my good friend John Westfall. And it's it's two phones. That's all we're going to talk about today. Unless something comes to mind.
One of us has one. The other has ordered one. So I will make mine, because I have very little to say here.
Since you don't have it yet.
At 2 in the morning, my time, on Friday, and I was going to order the iPhone X through the Apple Store app.
Okay.
However, it wasn't coming up, and I got a note. I found on Twitter people were saying that Verizon was open a little earlier than everyone else, so I went over to Verizon, placed my order for the 256-gigabyte iPhone X.
Is that the biggest?
That's the biggest, because I'm sick of running out of space on my 32-gigabyte iPhone 7 Plus. So I did that, went very quickly and smoothly, and now I'm just fingers crossed that I actually get the device on Friday of this next week. There's, you know, the original email, the original notice was, well, it's shipping on, well, it's nebulously said it's shipping on 11.3. I would like it to ship a little bit earlier than 11.3, so it shows up on 11.3.
Right.
But we'll see how that goes. Now, I did have an annoyance with, I've never really ordered through Verizon before. I've always ordered, well, I guess a few years ago, back when we still had subsidies, I ordered through Verizon. I usually order through Apple, but their store didn't come up. I mean, I think it was 10 after, and I still wasn't seeing the Apple store come up.
Right.
So I went through Verizon, had a little bit of a hiccup yesterday. I got a notice from my credit card saying, hey, Verizon tried to charge you a big chunk of money for something, and we stopped them.
Oh, they protected you from Verizon.
And I was this you? And I said, yes, that was me. Okay, well, you're going to have them reprocess the charge.
Oh, no.
I thought, well, how do you get Verizon? It's not like you're going to go down to a corner store and be like, hey, you know, rerun my credit card.
Yeah.
So I actually used the online chat feature with Verizon, and the agent looked at my order, said, hey, it's still there. You're going to get an email that says, you know, rerun the transaction. And sure enough, about 45 minutes after my credit card let me know that they had valiantly stopped my approved activity, I did get a email from Verizon saying, hey, go in. And then that took like 2 seconds, and they did process it. And now when I look at my credit card's pending transactions, it is sitting there. So hopefully that did not cause any hiccup in my order. I don't think it did, but we shall see.
Yeah. So two things I've read about since I am not ordering an iPhone X is, number one, I read that some people were able to order the iPhone X ahead of the midnight Pacific time availability by changing their clock on their iPhone and to past midnight Pacific, and then the order went through.
Wow, that is remarkable in many ways. I don't know what to think about.
I have not tried this, nor do I know anyone personally, but I think I read it somewhere, like on Twitter or something, that people were doing that. I don't know if they're joking or not, but that's item one. Item two, apparently, and I'm not quite sure what I just kind of saw a headline somewhere, didn't really read it, you know, too long, didn't read, that iPhone 8 sales are suffering because apparently everybody wants the 10. Like you.
That doesn't surprise me too much, because if you owned an iPhone 7 or 7 Plus,
right,
or even maybe a 6 or 6 Plus, you probably didn't find the 8 all that attractive.
I know,
same
I didn't.
Style, same sizes, but for me, the thing that's really attractive, in fact, I was talking with one of my coworkers on Friday, a coworker that I'm planning on selling my iPhone 7 Plus to, and she was saying, well, how big is the new one? I said, it's ironic. The new one is smaller, but it's a bigger screen.
Right.
And really, that's all I care about. I'd rather have a smaller device in my hand with a really nice screen versus a big device. So I'm looking forward to experiencing that. But yeah, if you already had anything newer than an iPhone 6, the iPhone 8 and 8 Plus were not big jumps for you.
Yeah, you know, as much as I wanted to play with that portrait lighting mode, really, how often am I going to use that, you know? And
well, you would use it probably 10 times more than me because you take about 10 times the photos I take. So.
That is statistically correct, I think. But still, you know, in the overall scheme of things, how important is that to me? And the answer was not really, not much.
And now you've upped your artistic ante because you can sketch things.
Yeah.
So that's even you're now producing more images per day than most states in the union, I think.
But and that's another thing, though. If the iPhone 8 or iPhone 10, which I'm also skipping, had support for the Apple Pencil. I don't think I would use it often because, you know, the screen's kind of small for drawing, but I think it would be attractive. I think that, you know, maybe taking notes in cramped quarters, like in a conference where I don't have a desk to sit at, you know, you just have chairs, conference seating, and you want to take some notes, I think that would be an attractive alternative for me.
That is an interesting idea, and you made me just think of something that's not on our show notes, but the note-taking app that I've used for a number of years is called Note Shelf.
Note Shelf.
And they recently created a new update that will run on iPhone. It was always just an iPad app before. And it's making me look for my JotScript pen over here, because I'm wondering now if I can take notes via my iPhone in a less cramped sort of environment. So I'm going to actually find the charger for my JotScript and charge it up, try it out this week, and report back next week on if that is a possibility. Because I guess I've always wanted, but it's never quite worked out, to have a little, you know, notepad-type emulator on my phone so that I could take notes as if I had a little pad of paper. And, you know, there's similar apps for that, but nothing has ever worked out quite too well. So we'll have to see. This might be a interesting little test.
Now, you know, I remember before I bought my Apple Pencil, I went looking at the JotScript styluses, and there were like a whole bunch. Some were passive, some were Bluetooth, I think. Which one are you using again?
This is the JotScript that was originally the Evernote edition. It's the second version of that.
Okay.
And hopefully it works. I haven't used it in about a year, and I just plugged it on the charger, so we'll find out soon enough if it works.
Okay. But it is an active stylus. It's a Bluetooth, since you're charging it. It's a Bluetooth or something else. Okay.
Yep. Bluetooth active stylus.
All right. Something for me to consider. I'll look forward to seeing what you learn after your pen or your stylus recharges.
Now, I think I'm very interested to spend the rest of the time hearing your impressions of the toy that you recently picked up.
Right. Well, I'm not sure how long, you know, I wrote a lot of notes for us, but I don't know actually how long it takes to talk about it. It might be really fast. So as I said, after looking at the iPhone 8 and iPhone 10 and my existing or my current iPhone 7 Plus, I decided I wasn't interested in upgrading to any of the new iPhones, even though I'm on one of those plans, those carrier plans that lets you update every year. Right. So if I updated this year, I would have to turn in my 7 Plus, and I would just basically continue paying my monthly, you know, monthly charges for the phone. But I decided not to do that. So what will probably happen is at the end of 2 years, I will own the phone, so to speak. And if I get the new phone, I keep the old phone and I just buy the new one. So, you know, I guess there's a little bit of savings if I had gone with it, but I would have to give up my old phone. So, you know, not a big deal. Anyways, but what I did need to do, or wanted to do, I should say, is that I have an aging Nexus 6. It is a little over 2 years old. The phone itself, the model itself, I should say, is 3 years old. It was released 3 years ago. I bought it in the middle of its cycle to dump T-Mobile, and I've had my rants about T-Mobile, why I dumped them. And moved to Google Fi, which ironically uses T-Mobile as one of its carriers, but I just don't have to deal with T-Mobile itself. So I looked at the Pixel 2, Pixel 2 XL, and I decided the only thing that the Pixel 2 has is a bigger screen, which I know for you is attractive, and a bigger battery. Now, they are made by different companies. The Pixel 2 is made by HTC, and XL is made by LG, I think. So I decided to go with the smaller Pixel 2. And one of the reasons why I could do that without a lot of thinking about it, you know, a lot of heartache, is unlike the 7, 7 Plus, or 8, 8 Plus distinction, where you give up the second lens And so you don't have portrait mode. You don't have optical zoom if you go with a smaller device. There's no trade-off except for the smaller screen and smaller battery. So I went to the Pixel 2. And one of the reasons is, by the way, is I noted a couple of weeks ago, just before I had to make this decision, that my left thumb seems to have a hyperextension problem. Basically, I've been using the 7 Plus and was it 6 Big 2? I guess the 6 Plus is Big 2.
Yep.
You know, for what, 3 years now. And I've been using my left thumbs. I guess I'm just holding my left hand and, you know, my right hand's like writing or carrying stuff. So much that I've hyperextended my thumb. Basically, it's in pain. And so I've had to change the way I use my 7 Plus. I literally have to now hold it in my left hand and kind of peck at it with my index finger if I'm, you know, selecting something, whatever, versus what I used to do is simply just hold it in my left hand and hyperextend my thumb over its large screen. Now, I know you can do that half-screen thing, but that's useless. So let's not even consider that as an option. So the smaller Pixel 2 screen is actually perfect because I can actually reach stuff without, you know, well, hyperextending my finger too much anyway. And I think John can kind of see the thing in front of him.
Yep.
So it's a little bit smaller. It's about the size of the, what, 5? I should go check. About the size of the 5. And a couple of things. So it's, you know, as everybody knows, it's USB-C only. And that also means no mini jack. So after, you know, giving Apple a hard time last year when Google introduced a Pixel about how they had a headphone jack and Apple didn't, no, they don't have a headphone jack. Not only don't they have a headphone jack, they don't ship with a headphone.
That's really taking what they were putting pot shots at last year and putting it up to a whole new level where at least Apple shipped it with headphones and adapter to go from lightning to 3.5 millimeter.
Yeah. Now they do ship with an adapter. They do have a mini plug to USB-C adapter and USB-A to USB-C adapter. But they don't have, you know, so I could plug in a conventional mini plug headphones into it with adapter, but you know how that works, right? You know I'm going to lose that adapter. Mm-hmm. So that's really a non-starter. So basically I got to spend another $30 to go buy a, you know, a wired headset. Because quite frankly, wired headsets are more stable, in my opinion, than Bluetooth ones. I don't know. I know you like your AirPods and they seem to be stable, but I just haven't had much luck with the cheaper Bluetooth headsets. I generally don't spend any more than $30 on my headsets. It's just kind of my tolerance limit for buying headsets. I haven't even tried listening to this thing yet because I haven't paired it with any Bluetooth yet. I guess I should do that to play with it, but no headphones. That's kind of a bad deal in my opinion. For, you know, for a pretty expensive phone in the scheme of things, I think it's $650. And I'm paying monthly, no interest for 24 months, so it's not quite as painful. The other thing I discovered moving to USB, and previous to this, my only USB-C device was my Samsung Chromebook Plus. And quite frankly, I didn't need to think about charging it on the road and things like that, because I don't take it on the road. I don't take any notebook on the road anymore. I just take an iPad mini and a phone. So I thought, well, you know, I took it to work and I thought, I didn't know what the battery life was. So I took it to work the next day, received it on Thursday, took it to work on Friday. And I was driving in, I said, I have no way to charge this thing because I don't have a, you know, my portable USB battery charger is USB-A port.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my my cables are USB-A to micro USB. So, or USB-A to Lightning. So I had no way to charge this thing if I wasn't at home. So I came home and took a look at cables that, you know, USB-A. And again, I have an adapter, but I know I'm going to lose it. So I came home and I looked for a reasonably priced USB-A to USB-C cable so I can charge this while on the road. And I found out something I guess I'd known about. Because, you know, there's that Google engineer, the study of really bad USB-C cables and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I discovered is that the USB-A to USB-C cables are not only not identical, they're not even identical with, well, they work with some devices and not others. And they listed right on Amazon. Like, this cable supports, you know, these 8 phones and these 3 won't work at all. when if you try to charge it with this cable. So at least they tell you. But because this is so new, the Pixel 2 is really not listed amongst the, you know, amongst the devices that are supported by cable. So I don't know what to buy.
That is a crazy thing that we've gotten to an age where the same cable, and it's called a USB-C cable. It's not anything special. Some will work and some will not. That's a little bizarre in my book.
And then, you know, according to Google,
like taking a step backwards.
Yeah, and that Google engineer who's doing testing, not so much compatibility, but, you know, cables that damage your device, right? It's actually potentially dangerous for your device, depending on which one you buy. So, you know, I've kind of been sticking to name brands that, you know, names I recognize, like Anker. But I haven't quite figured out what to do. Now, I will say that I do have an Anker USB-C to USB-C cable, you know, and I do have a plug-in, I think it, is it an Anker? Might be an Anker. You know, gang charger. It has four USB-A ports and one USB-C port. And I plug that into my phone, and that USB, you know, plug-in charger, gang charger, does fast charge on this phone. So, you know, I have something, when I travel, I have something carried. I don't have to carry my travel charger. I can just carry that one thing and charge my, you know, my iPhone, and which with it has a lightning cable. Lightning USB-A, and charge this, which is USB-C to USB-C on the gang charger. So, you know, there's at least one less adapter to carry, but I still would like something for the portable solution. And of course, in Hawaii, I can't order a USB-C portable battery charger because they won't ship it to Hawaii. So, you know, I'm pretty much stuck with whatever battery chargers I have or what I can buy locally at a store, because the stores can get them shipped, I don't know, by boat or something. Presumably, they can. They have some kind of a waiver to do.
Every day, Superman picks up a case of chargers and flies it right over.
Oh, if only that were true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he only makes one trip a day. He's an insanely expensive air freight.
And since he's invulnerable, there's no, you know, even if it explodes, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. Well, it's exploded like 10 times on him, but, you know, he just sends the suit out for dry cleaning. And
yeah.
And,
you know. I think he can just heat vision clean it.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
Well, he still gives the dry cleaning bill to the company that ordered it,
yeah.
Even if you do it himself.
So the next thing I wanted to discuss is the case. So as I mentioned, I think last week, I got my OtterBox Defender case for the Pixel 2 in. It's $50. And, you know, OtterBox has a pretty good rep. You know, they've been around a long time. I've got an OtterBox on my iPhone 7 Plus that I really like a lot, and it's not the Defender. The Defender is kind of the armored one, the one I have on the iPhone Plus. I think it's like the commuter model or something like that. Oh, John, you're turning paper or something.
Oh, I'm in stuck mode, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I noticed your video froze, but anyway, so the difference between the commuter and the Defender is the commuter doesn't have a built-in screen protector. It is just a case on the sides and the back, which is fine for the iPhone Plus. But for whatever reason, and I think I have AppleCare Plus for that, so perhaps I was less cautious or less overly cautious about the screen. And I've never had a problem with the screen before, so you know, maybe I'm careful enough that I felt like I didn't need a fully armored system. But for this guy, for this Pixel C, or Pixel 2, I decided that I wanted an armored case. Mostly because I didn't like the other cases I saw that were available from Google. So I picked up the Defender model, and I got it. And the first thing I found is I had no idea how to take it apart. Because you got to take it apart to, you know, put in your phone. It's a multi-layered system with a rubber outer coating and so forth. So, okay, I figured out how to get the rubber coating off, but then I couldn't figure out how to unclip the two sides of the case that actually, the plastic case, the polycarbonate, whatever it is, that goes around the Pixel 2. The paper instructions that came with it were absolutely useless. Went to the web, including OtterBox's site, and there's nothing on it. So I went to YouTube and looked at a couple of videos on the Defender 2, the Defender for other devices. And that at least gives me a clue that, you know, where to look for the clips. other cases apparently only have two or three clips. This thing has five clips that you got to pop off before you can take them apart. So that it took a good long time for me to just take it, figure out how to take it apart, and then putting it in was easy. But here's what I learned once I got it in. There are two things. One, I asked Otterbox earlier if the squeeze to activate Google Assistant worked with the case on. They weren't sure. They thought it would work. And the answer is yes, it does work. So it actually works a little too well because of sensitivity. I set it to kind of medium, but I'm still probably grabbing it the wrong way. I'm grabbing the wrong places when I pick up my phone. So there's that. So it works. That's a good thing. The bad thing is I got to readjust the sensitivity a bit or learn how to pick up my phone differently. The second thing, oh, I guess there's three. I'm just going to type in the third thing. The second thing is that the built-in transparent screen protector. Now, this is not one of those roll-on screen protectors where you got to clean your screen and smooth it out and get the bubbles out, all that. Now, this is built into the case, so you put the front part of the case on, and that includes the screen protector. Now, normally, this isn't a problem. I have a Unicorn Beetle case for my N66. It works beautifully. It too, is an armored case like this is the Defender. And the only reason I didn't buy one for this phone is I couldn't find one for the Pixel 2. Otherwise, I would have bought the Unicorn Beetle brand. So the problem with the screen protector that's built in is it's not perfectly flat on the screen. So there's a little bit of gap, which you can feel when you press down on the screen. And it makes typing less accurate for whatever reason, and certainly less tactily pleasant. So I might have to replace this case, and I kind of wasted $50. I don't know if I can return this to Google. I think I might go see if that's possible, because I don't think it's worth $50 if this with this screen protector. With you can feel that gap between the screen protector and the screen. Again, this has not happened with the much cheaper. I think I paid $20 for the Unicorn Beetle case for the Nexus 6, which apparently is a much more accurate build than this $50 device. And the third thing is, one of the attractive things about this case is it comes with a belt clip. So the clip protects the front of the protects the screen essentially, and so that side faces your body, and there's a clip that goes over your belt. The problem is it's a really cheap belt clip, and it popped off when I think I got into the car or something. So I don't think I'm going to use that belt clip because I know I'm going to lose my phone one day. Anyway, so Otterbox Defender for Pixel 2, $50 directly from the Google Store. I think you can get it from Otterbox itself. I'm not recommending it. I'm getting it down.
What you are saying echoes a lot of what I experienced with the Otterbox Defenders, even with the – I had them for the iPhone 5 and the iPhone 6 Plus.
Yeah.
And the 6 Plus one – I could use it with the 5. The 5, it wasn't that bad, but by the 6 Plus, it was just so bulky and so imprecise in its the way it was installed and the way that it, the screen protector, there was a little bit of a gap, I remember. It wasn't so big that it distracted me, but it still was somewhat annoying. So it seems like Otterbox, the Defender series, I don't know if they just think more material is going to make people feel better about the case, but...
Well, for me, it does, to be honest.
Yeah, but I don't know. Every time I see the comparisons of cases, it doesn't seem like... It seems like the design of the case is much more important than the amount of material that is around your phone.
Some cases
are well-designed, and I don't know about the Otterboxes anymore. They made a name for themselves because they were the first really rugged cases,
right.
But I think a lot of companies have stepped up... And for what it's worth, I used to like using the belt clips, but I always found them to clip off. In fact, I remember having to order a replacement belt clip for my iPhone 5 because I used it enough that one day I sat down in a chair and it was too close of a call and the thing just broke.
Wow.
The phone was fine, but the belt clip was destroyed.
Yeah.
So I don't really use belt clips anymore, and for my iPhone 10 that I ordered, I just ordered the same case that I have my iPhone 7 Plus in, which is the Apple silicone case. And this thing's taken two or three drops with that case on it. It's been fine, so I'll just go with that again.
Yeah, I think I might go with either the OtterBox commuter case, like the one I got from iPhone 7 Plus, which seems to be fine. Doesn't have a built-in screen protector. Or I'll get one of the Live cases or something from mm-hmm. Google itself. But I tend
to only go with either a silicone case anymore or the 12 South Lookbook cases.
Yeah.
When I want a wallet case. But I haven't bought a rugged case in a long time.
Yeah, so I've got a case for now. I'm not happy with it. Again, OtterBox Defender for Pixel 2, not recommending it. In fact, I would recommend against it. I need to go find another case.
That's Todd's suggestion. Send it to your worst enemy.
Yeah. I will say one thing that is okay with the case, and that is the access to the fingerprint reader, which is in the middle of the back of the phone. There is no problem using it with the case on, so I'll say that for it. And it doesn't seem to interfere with the camera. So, that's not a big deal. Okay, speaking of the camera, I am really impressed by the photos I've used it for so far. It has a portrait mode, even though it doesn't have a second lens. That seems to work. I don't know if it's as good as the iPhone 7 Plus. I haven't really done that A/B testing yet. But it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, you certainly get the bokeh effect that, you know, looks like, you know, a nice camera does with different depth of field. The photos themselves are really crisp. I mean, really, really, really nice. And it still uses JPEG, unlike Apple, who decided to go with their own weird... Well, actually, it's not their own weird. I guess it's the next generation HEIC. I don't know how you pronounce it. Heck.
Hike? I don't know. Whatever. Don't know. Who knows? But, that sounds more fun.
Which leads to its own problems, by the way, because Apple now uses HEIC, I didn't have any graphic editors on my Chromebook or anything else for that matter. I don't think my PC has anything either. They can work with the file image type. So I went to go find a HEIC to JPEG converter, which is web-based. To convert mm-hmm. a file so I could do a side-by-side screen, not screenshot, but side-by-side photo to compare the iPhone 7 Plus, and which is HEIC, and the JPEG output from the Pixel 2. But in any case, really nice photos. Dynamic range seems really nice, so the darks and lights seem to be really nice. The colors are nicely saturated, you know, not fake saturation. The flash, flash photography is always a problem. I think unless you've got an SLR with a nice, you know, separate flash, but, the videos are nice. I would say that, you know, I put an article on my GossipWalrus.com site with the side-by-side photos I just mentioned, mm-hmm. showing something I've always had problems with, and that's taking photos of really bright red objects, mostly flowers, but there are some other things that, you know, bright red that just are
angry
blown
people.
Out. Angry people.
Yeah.
Angry birds.
That are always Looney Tunes characters when they drink hot sauce.
Yeah. They're, you know, really blown out. And it's still a little blown out on this, but I would say a heck of a lot less than everything else, including the point and shoot, you know, conventional cameras I've used over the years. Mm-hmm. And I would say it's noticeably better than the iPhone 7 Plus. I don't know about the 8 Plus because I don't have one. I don't know about 10 because I don't have one. Perhaps one day I'll ask a friend who has one of those to hang out with me for about 5 minutes so we can take a photo of something red using the same spot, same lighting exactly, et cetera, and do a comparison to that. But I'm going to say that I kind of wish I had bought the 128K model instead of 128 gigabyte model instead of 64 gigabyte model of the camera, because I think I'm going to be taking a lot more photos on the Pixel 2 than I had anticipated. I didn't take many photos on the Nexus 6 because it simply wasn't a good camera compared to the iPhone, 6 or 7. Although I'll say one more thing about the camera is that the Nexus 6, my previous Android phone, even though its overall photo quality wasn't as good as the iPhone 6 or 7, Its low light photos were always better than the iPhone. And the Pixel 2 is the same. It's got really nice low light photo capabilities. I'm really very pleased with it. Not only can you have some dynamic range so you can see the light and dark and, you know, like low, like let's say nighttime photos with, you know, just minimal lighting from, say, a bulb, you know, in the distance or something. But it doesn't look grainy. You know, the relative ISO is not pumped so high that, you know, you get basically a lot of graininess. It's really, really, really nice photos. Really, really pleased with that. And anyway, I'll have a link in our blog with this podcast that links to my ogasawalrus.com article, where so you can see the comparison of the two photos of iPhone 7 Plus and Pixel 2. A photo of a bright red hibiscus I took on Friday. One thing I do miss photo-wise is that because it doesn't have a second lens like the 7 and 8 and 10, pluses I should say for the 7 and 8, is that there's no optical zoom. And the same is true of the 2 XL. It doesn't have a second lens either, so it doesn't have optical zoom. I use even though it's only, and I use that in quotes, only 2x optical zoom for the 7 and 8 pluses, it is really handy to have that optical zoom, in my opinion.
Yeah, I use that probably more than I use the regular, 1x zoom.
Yeah.
Just because it tends to be that whatever I'm taking a picture of is far away, and if I can get the optical, I'd rather have the optical.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even sometimes, you know, you just can't get as near as you want to for like some, you know, small woodland creature or something you want to take a photo of. And, you know, if you take a step forward, that critter's going to move. So just pop it to 2x and you get a little bit better photo than you might have otherwise.
Now, if only you were in a Disney movie, you could just walk right up to them and they would stand right there.
Oh, they would just, you know, come up to me and, you know, let me kneel down and pet them on the head. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's obviously the solution.
Yeah, yeah, we need to live in the Disney movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think I mentioned the fingerprint reader earlier when I was talking about the OtterBox Defender. But I just want to say again that, you know, I really had some doubts about this whole fingerprint on the back of the phone design, having used the, you know, how long have we had the fingerprint on the front? Was it only with the 7 or was it with the 6?
Well, it was the 4S. Or no, the 5S that had the fingerprint reader for the first time.
Okay, yeah. So we've had it for years, and I'm kind of trained to just, you know, pop my thumb, or if I'm holding the phone, use my index finger. So I had some real reservations about this whole idea of a fingerprint reader on back, but you know what? It works pretty well. The only thing bad is basically it rules out using your thumb as a convenient way to unlock it. It just doesn't make sense to unlock it with your thumb. With the mm-hmm. fingerprint reader in the back. But, you know, at least you can use your two index fingers or your middle finger or whatever. Middle finger. Yeah, I guess it would work. I just have it registered, my two index fingers. Hopefully I keep those. And I'll be able to keep unlocking my phone. Otherwise, you can use a multi-digit passcode to get it out. The other thing I noticed, and this is interesting. So, John, I don't know if you've noticed it, but if your hands are wet, like you're in the rain, or you just wash your hands and they're not completely dry, or you're just sweating, the thumbprint or fingerprint on your iPhone probably doesn't work too well, right?
Yep, I have noticed that.
I have tested this with a wet finger, you know, like, you know, wash my hand and then try to unlock. It unlocks every time.
That's good.
Yeah.
I haven't noticed that. I've noticed it much more in the last few weeks, maybe month. So I'm wondering if when the Touch ID sensor is clean, like when you first get it from the factory, mm-hmm. if it's a little more resilient to water, and once it gets a little dirtier, if it's not. So I might try to clean mine off a little and see if it's still the same problem. But that's definitely a nice thing.
Yeah, unless you're a criminal. You know, because if you're criminal, you just lick your fingers and then you can't unlock your phone. But of course, with your iPhone 10, you know, you're going to lose your fingerprint reader. Have you been thinking about that?
I have, and I'll see what I feel about it. If I don't like it, I'm sure I'd have no trouble selling an iPhone 10 to downgrade to an 8 Plus. So, but I'll give Apple benefit of the doubt. I really don't like giving it up. But yeah. In the end of the day, the argument that they made was the argument, the only argument I would have gone for, which was that Face ID is supposedly more secure than Touch ID.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time believing that. I'd like to see twins try it. Identical twins, you know.
Well, I do have I have access to identical twins. Oh. My students are identical twins. So I could try, if it allowed multiple users, I could try training it for one and see if the other can trigger it.
But that would be fascinating. In any case, so one of the things I noticed, and I kind of wanted to get your feedback on this, in the old days, fingerprint readers were terrible, right? I think the iPhone was truly the first reliable fingerprint
quick
recognition fingerprint system.
Reliable?
You're right?
Yep.
And so, you know, after I started using iPhones, I kind of felt more comfortable with fingerprint ID. Because it, you know, it wasn't frustrating to use. Now, face recognition, I've used it for a while now. I think my Nexus 4 had facial recognition for a while until it got turned off by Google for whatever reason. And one of the updates, the facial recognition just went away and, you know, could not be used anymore. And I could never figure it out, but, you know, switched back to pins, which I really don't like. And that was okay. Now, I've been using facial recognition with Surface Pro 4, as I don't know if you have, for Windows Hello. I don't know if you use that. But it's kind of slow. And, you know, I've got a Core i7 on my Surface Pro at work. So you would think it'd be a little bit faster, but it is not as fast as using a fingerprint ID.
It's kind of slow, and it's also a little bit buggier than what I would think of as an acceptable daily use scenario. Right. So there are times when my Surface works really well using recognition with Windows Hello, and other times where I could have typed in my PIN code 7 times in the time it took for it to dump me to, okay, fine, just put in your PIN code.
Right, right. Yeah, the thing I've noticed is, well, I'll say one thing good and one thing bad about the Face ID from the Surface Pro 4. The good thing is that because it uses a combination of light and infrared, it will recognize your face in the dark. So if you are, you know, again, using the conference setting, if you are in a darkened conference room where, you know, they've dimmed the lights so they can put a slide deck on the screen, it will still see your face even though it's pretty dark. That's a good thing. The bad thing is every now and then it really insults me. I will pop on the Surface Pro 4. I'll look at it, you know, full face forward in the screen, giving it my full attention. And it'll tell me I don't see a face. and several times I've felt quite emotionally distressed by this comment from my Surface Pro 4 saying, what do you mean you don't see it? This is not a great face. Okay, I get that. You know, it's not going to win any prizes, but it's a face. So come on, recognize it. You know, not my favorite thing. So, okay, I'll look forward. And you say you may be getting your phone at the end of this week, so maybe we can talk about it next weekend?
Yeah, we can hope. That is when it's slated to show up for people who ordered it 2 minutes after 2,
okay.
As what I put mine in. So we'll see. It'll either be here this week or I will be complaining next week on the podcast.
Okay,
the
it'll be a rant
the entire
cast.
Podcast to be one massive rant by John.
Okay. Now, one thing, a couple other things before I close out this, you know, kind of almost single topic podcast is that the battery life so far has been pretty good. You know, I told you Friday morning, the first full day of use, I was driving off to work and thinking, I have no way to charge this thing if it has a bad battery. Or not bad battery, but a, you know, battery doesn't have a good charge life. But it lasted all day and all night, and I never had to charge it until I put in a charger before I went to sleep. And by the way, I've been reading more and more that I shouldn't do that, but I'm not quite sure what to do. Well, I got to think about this. They say you shouldn't leave it charging overnight, but I thought it was designed to do that. We'll see. The battery life, I think, is better than the... Well, let me rephrase that. It's better than the Nexus 6 as it is today, but it is 2 years old. it's been recharged, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times. So you got to give it some. It's probably at, what, 85% capacity by now, something like that. Maybe 90% capacity of what it was when it was brand new. It is a lot faster than the Nexus 6. So this is Nexus 6. You see, there's a 6P, there's a Pixel, so it's three generations old compared to this. And maybe I should expect that, but I'm still a little surprised how much faster it is. And I'm going to show John something. I don't know if he can see it. But it's got a live screen, which I'm not sure is a good idea. It's a live background screen, kind of like motion photos on the iPhone. And John, I'm going to kind of, let me bring you up here. I'm getting some kind of notice, but it won't tell me why. So I'm going to see if John, I don't know, John, if you look at the screen is one of the default.
Oh, it turned off.
Yep, the default ones that came with it. And I'll give John a look. If you look at the where the waves meet the beach in this photo, you'll notice the waves are moving.
Yep, I do see that.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
It's kind of cool. I don't know how much processor power it uses. Hopefully not too much.
Well, that does remind me when my wife and I were both on Android in about the gingerbread, honeycomb era, jelly bean era even. There was a number of apps that did live backgrounds, and they looked really cool, but man, could they eat up your CPU.
Yeah. Top. Yeah. Now that we have more powerful processors, hopefully it's not an issue. It doesn't seem to be one of this. One thing I did find out that it seemed like a poor design choice is that the default on these phones is Google Photos. That makes sense, right? It's a Google device. Mm-hmm. Google Photos is the default photo viewer, and of course that looks back at your Google Photos online. You cannot take a photo that is in Google Photos storage in the cloud and say use this as my background. You have to download it to the device and then use it as a background, which seems to me a design flaw. You know, especially since it's designed, the other design option on this is offload all your photos to Google's cloud immediately. And, you know, that means you won't have any local photos. So, anyway, not happy with that.
I'm just looking at Google Photos on my iPhone, and I am noticing that there is an option from the share sheet on my iPhone to at least add a Google photo as a watch faceplate or assign to a contact on my phone. So I can at least do some things with it that you can't do on a Google phone, which is kind of strange.
Save as video, save as... Here, let me try use as. Use as wallpaper or contact photo. Okay, maybe I can. Or is this on my device? I can't remember where I showed this. But anyway, I know I ran into that problem the other day. Like on Thursday night when I was playing with this thing. Okay, well, that's about it. Anything you want to add, John? I know you are now in the phase I was a week ago, anxiously awaiting your...
Anxious anticipation and frustration that the week is going to take so long to get to Friday. Yep, but I'll survive somehow, and we will hopefully be able to talk about the iPhone X next week, and... I can ask questions about does this work the same way on the Pixel 2 or the Pixel 2, and you can ask questions, does it work the same way on the iPhone 10?
Yep, really looking forward to that. As I said, I'm skipping this whole iPhone generation, so I'm really looking forward to what John has to say. Maybe he'll change my mind about the iPhone 10. I don't think so. Any more than I would change his mind about going back to Android. Anyway, okay, so MobiView's 228, mostly Pixel 2, a little bit of iPhone 10. We'll talk to you later.